He's a spaz. He's borderline illiterate. Like, seriously.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with returning guest Joshua Humphrey about the Minnesota Fringe Festival. We also get a chance to answer his five questions, and I'll tell you, they're doozies.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my favorite co-host in the whole world, Molly Glover.
Aw, thanks.
And Nick Glover.
Eh, fuck you.
I'm his favorite.
Yeah, sure.
At least my favorite co-host on this podcast. We'll talk about
that. You're only his favorite because the other option is me. If it were anyone else, it'd be them. So
I did say co-hosts.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Plural.
Oh. We're both his favorite.
Oh, that sucks.
That's not as special.
That's less. That's true. Like, I'd rather be his least favorite at that. With that, I mean.
We're never
I bet we could be.
All right, let's get to the topic at hand. Our guest this week is Josh Humphrey, a returning guest.
Hooray.
He was on our podcast just about this time last year.
It's true.
It was,
talking about the amazing meeting. And now we're going to talk about something else almost as amazing, maybe more amazing, the Minnesota Fringe Festival. Josh, you have gone, I mean, the Fringe Festival, how many years old is it? Do you remember?
It started in 2006, I think. No, this is the 20-year anniversary, so.
So, yeah. Way earlier than that.
1993. I had 1996 in my head because they showed a video today. They uploaded it on to YouTube where Fringe venues throughout the year, so they slowly morphed where all the Fringe venues went. That's just a simple map that they threw from Google.
Sure.
But it was just all the venues over the years and
where
they were.
See.
So that was really cool. They're putting up a lot of content, the Minnesota Fringe Festival, on their YouTube channel. You can go look at that. I think it's just searched by Minnesota Fringe.
I was gonna say it's just Minnesota Fringe.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah.
So Phil Lowe, you know Philip Lowe.
Yeah.
He is doing a bunch of interviews for the Minnesota Fringe because he's on the board of directors this year. He's
seriously
one of the only, I think he's the only artist on the Fringe board.
Okay.
So he's giving the artist perspective to the Fringe board and kind of directing them and trying to give them input on like the artist level of the Fringe. But he's conducting interviews with the past executive directors. So Bob McFannin, who was the first executive director and started the Fringe, he does like a 10-15 minute interview with Bob and then talks with actors from the Bob McFannin era. And then each successive executive director is interviewed too. I think they're up to the third one right now. But that's just on the YouTube channel. You can get that probably on the website as well.
Cool.
Who here has been to a Fringe show before?
I know
Tim has.
I was in one last year.
I've been in one.
Yeah. I haven't been to anything that we weren't in.
I've been to one that you haven't, yeah.
How familiar is your audience with the Minnesota Fringe?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Probably
so people
across
out
the spectrum,
there
across the spectrum.
In your audience, they should know that the Minnesota Fringe takes place from August 1st through the 11th. It's at, I think, 16 venues this year.
Sounds right.
Some downtown, some in uptown, I think some on the West Bank. And 176 performances this year.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Yes.
It's an organizational feat.
And when you 176 shows, because each show gets five performances, right?
So, times that by five.
So, 176 productions.
Productions.
With five
yes.
performances each.
Uh-huh.
My God.
Yes, it's intense.
It's massive. It's massive. It's an immersive experience.
Well, you often do, like, several things during the Fringe.
I wouldn't say often. You've been known to. The last 2 years, last year I ended up getting a last-minute spot, so I had a show that I wrote and I appeared in, and I got a last-minute spot that Nick and Molly both appeared in that was I did a really quick improv show that was really a lot of...
It was well-received.
Yeah, it was very well-received.
That was Just a Minute?
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
Yeah, and this year I have written a show that I will not be appearing in, and I have written another show that I will be appearing in. So
we're going to talk about those after this podcast. On my podcast.
And what's your podcast?
Twin Cities Theater Connection. I run a little blog/podcast. It's mainly the podcast. I just throw up audio. Usually every 2 weeks, what we do is we discuss typically news items in the Twin Cities theater community and do an interview based on what that person who happens to be the guest is working on at the moment. And then we talk about shows that we've seen and or are looking forward to. Awesome. In the community. Started doing that a few months back. Usually before then it was a straight interview program. That was something that I kind of wanted to change. I wanted to kind of branch out a little bit.
Excellent.
And sort of started incorporating news. And that's kind of been in tandem with, I was running the Minnesota Playlist blog for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And writing a bunch about theater, not only locally, but nationally and internationally, just for the Twin Cities theater community. Mm-hmm. That's kind of came off here at July because everybody is gearing up for the Minnesota Fringe Festival.
Sure.
So everybody goes on like a semi-vacation as they sort of focus on the Minnesota Fringe.
Yeah, it's
vacation.
Very true.
I'm making air quotes.
Yeah, it's rehearsal time.
Well, it's for people like you, Tim, it's Convergence goes straight into Fringe, and that goes straight into the Minnesota Renaissance Festival
season. Yeah, it's the dumbest fucking schedule I've ever imagined anybody doing in their entire lives. The thing that I think is great about the Fringe, and the reason I wanted to talk about it, I mean, we're geeks without God, and it's not really an atheism thing, but it is a geeky thing. There's a lot of really great geeky material that takes place at the Fringe, and especially Minnesota geeks, I wish would get to see more of the theater that's being produced there. You know, Joseph Scrimshaw, who's very popular at Convergence, has been a guest on our podcast. He does shows at the Fringe pretty much every year.
And he just got back into the Fringe this year. He wasn't going to be in the Fringe this year.
Yeah. And this year he's in the experimental stage. That's where we were last year doing our Just a Minute show. And that's an 80-seat theater, which Joseph regularly sells out the Rare Egg Thrust, which is a 300-seat theater. So
that'll be interesting for him because I mean the Rare Egg Thrust can seat, did you just say like 400
something like
but he
400.
Does shows at the Bright Lake Bowl, which is only 84, so I mean that's
sure,
not like
that's,
it's, it's not like he's not played to those audiences lately.
Yeah, but no. The regular season though outside of Fringe is you're not getting as much draw often.
Sure.
Fringe brings everybody to the yard.
Yeah, every single theater fan, every single theater attendee in the Twin Cities, or so it would seem, is coming to the Fringe. They're looking for And Joseph has been doing shows for so long that he is a known brand at the Fringe, which means there are hundreds of people that are going to want to go see just his show at the Fringe that don't go see his shows outside of the Fringe. I think it's a frustration as an artist is how do you connect to the people that you connected to at the Fringe outside of the Fringe. That's certainly a frustration.
Well,
that's
definitely
has.
An ongoing problem in the community because many people, their first foray into the community is the Fringe. And often that occurs, okay, we have a really great idea for a show, let's produce it, and then it'll be part of us building a company. And what happens is they, you know, they put on that show, it's great, they get audiences, but they're unable to carry that audience into the greater season. And they're sort of stuck with maybe just producing a Fringe show every few years depending on what the balls say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And by balls he means the lottery balls
not
when they
balls.
Draw. It's not that like you have to go like lick some guy's balls to get
or
in the
like
Fringe or something, right?
A test
right?
of bravery.
Right?
No, I don't think Bob McFadden was in
or a
it wasn't
test
in his
bravery.
Original composition.
I like the idea of it being a test of bravery. Like, instead of it being a lottery draw, like it's like feats of strength to see who can get in, or like
jump over this chasm,
like Quetzal Chatterock.
the Gom Jabbar.
I'm still stuck on licking balls.
That would probably,
tell
that would
me
probably
about
result
it.
In really terrible theater, but an interesting selection process to say the least. Yeah, I mean the thing that's interesting about the Minnesota, there are fringe festivals all over. The country and actually all over the world. So, I mean, even people that aren't from Minnesota that listen to this podcast, I think if you're interested, I don't want to say interested in experimental theater, but if you're interested in watching people who are given the opportunity to try out really anything they want to try out within the framework of you've got an hour.
For all the good and ill that may bring.
Yes. Because like Tim said, it's random. It's judged by the bingo balls or the ping pong balls that Robin Gillette or the executive director, because she's leaving after this year.
That's
wrong. We're going to miss you, Robin. But they pull out randomly every year, and then there's a huge, long wait list. And a lot of other fringes are juried. Like, I think the New York Fringe is juried.
Isn't the Edinburgh, I think, too? Like,
the Edinburgh is so huge, I couldn't really say.
Take the Minnesota Fringe and multiply it by 10, and that's
The Edinburgh Fringe goes on for a whole month.
Yeah,
and,
it's
like,
insane.
The catalog is, like, as big as this.
I can't imagine.
It's a fun
shows. It's a crazy clusterfuck. I know Robin and Jeff Larson, who's the new incoming executive director, went to the Fringe in Edinburgh last year, and I think Jeff gave a presentation on like social media them. But like, you could spend all of your time just seeing shows, and everybody's hungry, just like here. Like, everybody is hungry to get audience members, so they're out with postcards, they're out talking you up on the street, they're trying to get butts in seats.
As somebody who's produced, this is now my fourth year in a row that I've been able to get in and produce a show, and I've written relatively successful shows, but it is really a challenge to get yourself from to get yourself to the what I would say is the upper level of people that audiences just automatically go to see, like Josh Carson. The last few years, written really funny shows, and now it's like Josh Carson puts on a show, people go see it.
His show this year is One Hit Thunder. There was a preview of it this past Fringe for All. Fringe for All happens, I think, three times before the Fringe actually starts.
Oh, okay.
There's two Fringe for Alls that are main people in town here who are doing shows, and that's just 90 minutes. Everybody gets 3 minutes on stage, and if you pass those 3 minutes, you're kicked off. So usually they make it. A couple of them, you know, go a little over, but they're just booted right off the stage.
That's crazy.
But he had a preview of One Hit Thunder there, and it was two young pop stars are drafted into being spies, like Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus types.
Sure.
And they're like trying to social media everything, but the spies are like the ones who actually have to train them are like, no, we're spying. Don't do this shit.
Yeah.
So he every year is doing
Stop checking in on Foursquare.
Exactly. Don't check in on Foursquare.
That's great.
He's a really interesting guy. I like what he's been producing.
Yeah, Josh Carson writes really funny shit.
But just like you said, like Joseph Scrimshaw, Josh Carson, some other one. I think you, Bill Steitler, are kind of getting into that.
Yeah, we'll see. I haven't got a lot of people interested in my shows this year, so
no one's interested in the Dreg show?
The Dregs fans are interested in the Dreg show. I haven't seen a lot of interest from Fringe audiences yet.
How do you know if you have interest when it hasn't even happened yet? That'd be confused.
That's a good question.
Well, I think there's a blitzkrieg right at the beginning of Fringe to see as many things as possible and to get opinions out there.
Sure.
Especially by the critics and everything.
But it hasn't started yet.
So how do you know that people aren't interested
in it? This year they've got something called the Fringe 5, where people can go out and choose the 5 shows they're most interested in watching. And like 75 people or something like that have done that. Neither one of my shows was picked once.
I got
that. That kind of tells you.
Is it like an Art Hounds thing where it's like a select group of people?
A little bit. No, it's just anybody who has a Fringe account can go and submit their
I have a Fringe account. So, I'll go pick your shows, Tim.
There you go. Thanks, Molly.
I'm not going to pick your shows.
Fuck you, Nick.
And the Fringe nepotism begins.
I'm going to pick Scrimshaw's show 5 times.
the thing that's great about the Fringe for me is the opportunity to really connect with all the other performers and producers in the Twin Cities. It's how I've been able to connect with other writers to get them to write stuff for Big Fun Radio Fun Time. It's a great opportunity to say to somebody, how would you approach this show? It's this amazing thing where everybody's competing for the same audience, but everybody's pulling for everyone else as well. You know, unless their show... The worst thing in the world is to go to a show at the Fringe that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
When you know the person who's doing it.
Yes.
Oh, when you know
the person that's doing it.
Yeah, because you're going to see them, and they're going to... You don't want to tell a friend of yours that their show is terrible.
No.
And that's... But at the same time, it's a very supportive environment. Everybody knows that people are trying stuff out, and they're going to... They're going to give you, hopefully, productive advice, not just, oh my God, your show is terrible.
What you're talking about, I think, is one of the most important and positive aspects of the Fringe, and that is community building. And I wrote something about this recently, especially for new people who are getting into the Twin Cities theater community. My cousin contacted me recently and like, Josh, how do I get involved in acting in the Twin Cities? And I was like, well, you audition as much as possible, you get on Minnesota Playlist, talk to read the audition notices there, read what people are interested in there in terms of the conversations that are happening, and you go to fringe shows when fringe time happens.
Yeah.
And you talk to as many people as you can, and you go to the bar afterwards and talk about the shows.
Yeah. Fringe Central is the bar. They have a bar that's set up afterwards that people just go and hang out, and that to me is the center of the fringe experience. I mean, as much as producing shows and having audiences like them is awesome,
schmoozing.
Schmoozing is fun.
Is that something that just anyone can go to, it's not something that's limited to
audience members, producers, actors, anybody can go there. It's
awesome.
At the Crooked Pint this year.
Okay.
So it's right downtown, I think, Washington.
Yeah, and they've got a big parking lot, and the parking's like $2.
Yeah, that's
really
brilliant.
Nice.
It's brilliant.
Because I imagine that there's a lot of people, and I don't know if any of them are listening to this podcast, but a lot of people that are, you know, either tangentially want to be in the theater, or like your cousin, you know, didn't get a chance this year. Maybe they had a baby. Maybe something happened that they couldn't, you know, be involved. And it's good to know that anyone who wants to can, or even if you're just a hangers-on or an audience member. Yeah.
And there are a lot of Fringe shows. I mean, if you're keeping an eye out maybe 2 months before the Fringe actually happens, there's a lot of shows that are going up and they need actors.
Yeah.
A lot of people produce, you know, together as a group gets together kind of separately and produces something. But a lot of people need actors and they need to fill in all the slots in their shows. And that's a great way to get involved in the community.
For sure. Yeah, if they know you. Because, you know, speaking as a Fringe producer, the last thing I want to do is hold fucking auditions.
Mm-hmm.
Denson and Young held auditions, I know.
Sure.
And, like, you know, there are people that even, you know.
Oh, sure, you can. But for me, it's so much easier to go, who do I know that's a performer that I can just get into this show?
Mm-hmm.
So that so that part's done.
Yeah.
It's one less stupid meeting you have to
have. And if I audition people, I don't honestly know how they're going to be.
That's true. And personality-wise, that's always tricky, too.
Well, a lot of the time, people end up working with people they've worked before. I mean, you guys will work together yourselves because you know each other. You trust each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, there was a reason that I cast you guys in, like, the opening ceremony sketch at Convergence.
Right.
Because I know you guys, I know what you can do, and I was like, all right, who do I need in what roles? Well, Molly and Nick are perfect for these two characters.
Yep.
And that's...
You can hear our voices, you know how we are, you can see our stage, you know how we act on a stage in general, yeah.
And that's what happens at the Fringe, too. A lot of producers are going to be like, I know this person, and I know what they can do on stage, and I'm going to just go to this person and take a chance. And see if they'll be able to do the show
but
for
that
me.
Seems like all the more reason to audition if you're interested in breaking into acting, because if you get in one show and maybe some other producer sees you in that show, you don't know who's in the audience. I mean, and it could be anybody who then the next time they're like, I want to know that.
Other people having an opinion of what it's like to work with you and whether or not
exactly.
that's a positive experience. I mean, you could be a mediocre actor, but if you're great to work with and you're easy to work with and you get along with people, that goes a long way.
And if you're up for anything.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think Fringe Central, you know, for anybody local who goes to Fringe and you don't go to Fringe Central, I'd recommend it. It is absolutely for audience members.
At least take a night or two.
Yeah. Give it a try.
He doesn't even drink.
I kind of Iron Man Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
I probably miss
Fringe. Drink through it.
Yeah, no. I think last year I missed two nights at Fringe Central where I was just like, all right, I need a night off of this. But... I kind
of
ironed
one of the nights I missed for Fringe Central last year was when Discovery touched down, or no, Curiosity on the
Mars.
Yeah, that was so awesome. I wasn't there.
I was like,
you talked about watching it in the bar, actually.
Yeah.
And watching the footage. Yeah, I remember.
And
that.
Like everybody was there and really enjoying it from what I was reading on Twitter at home because I had to get home and go to bed.
Yeah.
Because I'm lame.
Well, and Fringe people are nerds. Seriously.
Yeah.
If you are a geek. Fringe is very much geek. The show I did last year was a show called The Complete Works of William Shatner Abridged. And it was pretty nerdy. And it went over like gangbusters at the Fringe.
I believe there's a TNG themed Fringe show this year. I can't remember the name of it.
Yes, there is.
Saw that. The something about it.
I might talk with them at Fringe for all this coming Monday, so I'm on the lookout for them.
Yeah,
for sure.
Then Matthew Everett, who's a longtime Fringe person, he's written a show that's got a bunch of monsters, werewolves.
How to Date a Werewolf is what
the
show is.
How to Date a Werewolf,
cool.
And that my show is the show that I wrote that I'm not in is called Schrodinger's Apocalypse, and it's about a zombie apocalypse. So there's a zombie theme at the Fringe this year.
Well, I think the zombie theme has cropped up in previous years. One of my favorites from, I think, 2000 and... 11 was Zombie High School, the musical.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was amazing. It had great songs, all a cappella, and it was, what it was is like zombies sort of have regained sentience, but they're sort of segregated.
Oh, yeah.
But there's an exchange program between schools, and so a normie goes to the Zombie High School, and of course ends up getting bitten and never falling in love.
Of course.
But it was great. It was fun.
Those dos. Yeah, they get bitten and they fall in love.
The thing that's...
It's a little bit like Warm Bodies, I guess.
I was just going to say, it sounds like that, yeah.
As a writer, what I like about The Fringe is just the opportunity to experiment, the opportunity to try something new, because once you get that spot, you can just take a chance. It's not like there's no financial risk, really. I mean, there's a little bit of money that you put into The Fringe, but the odds are you can sell enough tickets to cover the producer fee. So
even just random people checking it out.
It's true.
Sure. And I mean, if your show is legendarily bad, well, then you'll actually sell a lot of tickets because everybody wants to see the worst show at The Fringe.
Yes. There's been occasions where I've gone to see the worst show at The Fringe purposely.
Yeah. Joseph Scrimshaw had an extremely successful show about
the worst show on the Fringe
that was called
That was before my time, unfortunately. I wasn't able to see that. I've only been fringing since 2009.
I don't know
when Joe was doing that show.
So you're a, you know, comparative rookie.
Comparative rookie. About the time since I started my own podcast is when I started fringing hard. And typically what I do is try to see every slot of The Fringe, which is a mind-numbing experience toward the end of it.
Yeah.
Because they're just starting to blur together, and you have no idea what you've seen before or what you're headed to toward next.
It's like a movie marathon.
It is very much like a movie marathon.
What is the cost to go to The Fringe? I know that it's like a flat ticket fee you pay per day or something like that?
Each individual show, if you're just showing up, I think is $12, but you have to have the Fringe button, which is $4. You only have to pay that charge once, so it's like a ticket fee toward The Fringe, and I think it goes to the basic administration and such. But there are different, you can buy a 10-spot pass, I think you can buy a 5-spot pass, and then there's the Ultra Pass, which I think right now, probably by the time this goes up, it won't be, but it's $175 now. By the time the Fringe Festival rolls around, I think it'll be about $200,
and that's just any show you want to go see.
As many as you want to go see, you can go see them. I think it works out if you see every show in the Fringe like $3.35.
It's a great
deal. So how do they determine that, just out of curiosity, behind the curtain, for the money for the show? So like, let's say you have a show. I mean, if people are buying Ultra Passes, they're obviously not paying the $12. So you're not getting $12 per ticket, clearly.
You're right.
Per audience member. Is it a super secret formula? Or?
It's not that secret. They tell all the producers about it, and I'm going to get it, I think, wrong. But it's in the producer's handbook. And basically they say, how many Ultra Passes did we sell?
Mm-hmm.
How many Ultra Pass tickets were used?
Mm.
And then they divide those numbers together.
You divide them together?
You divide the amount of money you made on Ultra Passes by the number of showings. And that's the amount of money that each show gets
from
Ultra Pass use.
And then they do the same thing, I'm guessing, for the 10 slot?
Or do they mark down where you used your... I always imagine it as pools of money.
I was just wondering, do they mark it down where you used your 10 spot? You know, are they writing down?
Well, a 10 spot is like 10 tickets.
Yeah. They're writing down that it was it's a 10 punch card. So they're writing when you get your ticket, they have to mark what kind of ticket it was. So there's the Ultra Pass.
That sounds like an administrative nightmare. That's crazy.
You'd think that, but it's run in such a way as everybody is into the theater by the time the show starts.
And gotcha.
It's very fluid. It's very well managed and run.
Allegra
Lingo, I think, is in charge of house services, and she runs a very tight ship.
That's amazing.
I think the ticket stubs, because they circle on the ticket stub what kind of ticket it is, and I'm pretty sure that as soon as the show starts, the first thing the volunteers at the table do is they separate them into piles and count them. So as soon as the show's over, they've got the count of exactly how many tickets were sold and in what categories.
Is this a lot like Convergence, where it's a mostly volunteer run?
It is mostly volunteers. In terms of the people who are giving you tickets and the people who are house managers. I think the house managers might be paid.
I think the house managers are paid.
The house managers are paid.
And they should
be,
because they work their asses off.
They do work their asses off. But I think they were probably volunteers at one point, too. They kind of work their way up the ranks. But there's tons of volunteers. And if you want to volunteer, I would suggest contacting the Minnesota Fringe. Fringefestival.org.
And if you volunteer, you can get tickets to shows.
That's true.
That's a nice deal.
So a lot of people finance it that way.
As a producer, you also get what's called a gold pass, which means you can go to any show you want as a rush line. So if the show doesn't sell out, you can get in, but you're taking a risk.
Yeah.
Like, say, Joseph Scrimshaw's show this year, he's in the Experimental, 80 seats, every single one of his shows is going to sell out. I guarantee it. And if you want to go, if you want to do a rush line, you're not going
to
get in.
But you could pay to go.
You can pay in advance. Yeah.
Yes. As an artist, you can still pay to go to a show. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, well, I don't feel like paying to go to Joseph Scrimshaw's show because screw him, then, you know. Screw that guy. So that's the risk, is you can get into a show for free, but you can't necessarily get into that show. And I know I could talk about the Fringe forever.
I love Fringe, and it's been one of the best parts of my Twin Cities theater community.
It's Christmas for theater nerds.
It's really, a lot of people describe it as theater band camp.
Yeah.
Which is basically what it is.
But I think anybody who's trying to get into theater in the Twin Cities or in any community that has a Fringe festival, you need to connect with that community. It's super important, I think, in this day and age, as Fringe festivals are becoming more prevalent.
I don't know how much time we have. Do we have a lot of time?
No, we're going to move to 5 questions.
I know off mic you had talked about some negative aspects of Fringe.
Yeah.
And we can talk about those a little bit, but do you want me to continue?
We'll take 2 minutes.
Two minutes. All right. I have 2 minutes. Right. So in terms of like getting to know everybody in the theater community, the Fringe is great, but it also has some warts in that a lot of people just focus on Fringe during the year, and that drains, I think like we were talking about before, it drains attention away from the rest of the season. It drains audiences. I'm drained after the Fringe because for about a month and a half after I have a refractory period.
Well, yeah.
If people only go to 5 shows a year and they go to all 5 at the Fringe Festival, it's not very
good. Oh, and God, and those of us who have shows happening during Fringe, like the Fearless Lab,
it's impossible to draw audiences.
Yeah,
it's hard.
The Fearless Lab, fortunately, is the Tuesday after Fringe ends.
Oh, is it? Yes. Oh, that's good at least.
I did that on purpose.
Because no one will be tired of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you do get tired and you get a little exhausted from it.
Sure.
But at the same time, too, everybody's drawing their attention to it, and so nothing else gets there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Attention.
As an artist, the challenge is trying to remount a show from the Fringe is almost always a failure.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard.
Even if you had a really successful show, you want to do it again, getting an audience to come to it is a real challenge.
Well, what incentive do I have to see it? Because I've seen it already.
Yeah. And the people that didn't go to the Fringe don't seem that interested in shows that came from the Fringe.
But if it was something like Scrimshaw's show where he could fill a 300, 400 seat theater and he's stuck in this 80 seat one, there's demand there where if he remounted his show, he'd...
Scrimshaw has a different business model than I would say most people at the Fringe have too, because I think he runs an LLC from what I remember.
Joking Envelope.
Joking Envelope. And that's run mainly by Sarah Scrimshaw, his partner. They put together the shows, and I think they sell the shows too, from what I recall.
Yeah,
not all of them, but a few of them are plays.
Joseph is one of the few people that's managed to make a name for himself outside of the Fringe, as well as within the Fringe. Mm-hmm.
But what is that? A 10-15 year process?
Yeah, it took a long time.
A long time.
And that's the tough thing is being Fringe famous. And I'm using that in air quotes. Mm-hmm. Being famous at the Fringe does not automatically translate into bigger audiences elsewhere. And
that's too bad.
If you're in Twin Cities theater, you kind of need to build that audience within Fringe and also build the audience outside of Fringe. Mm-hmm. And those are two different audiences.
And some companies have been successful doing that. Not everybody is, though.
So those are some of the bad things about Fringe. But we've got to get to our 5 questions. And Josh, you have been on our podcast before, which means we've asked you our 5 questions.
You have.
And that means that you get the extraordinary privilege of being able to ask us 5 questions.
Indeed.
Do you have 5 questions prepared?
Yes. Oh. I did prepare some in advance.
That is fortuitous.
So let's try to knock them out here.
All right.
So my first question is that if there is one thing that you wish you could pray away, what would it be?
So this is...
Because people usually talk about praying the gay away.
You mean like an affliction?
Yes, like an affliction.
Like you cure with prayer.
I don't know if you have any afflictions you want to get rid of, but if there is one thing you could pray away, what would it be?
Just in ourselves or in general in the
world? No, I think in general. Okay. If you want to really be self-reflective about it, you can.
Boy, see, to me, like, I instantly just think, monkey's paw, that's a trap. Because like anything I can think of that I'd want to wish away, I know somewhere it's like, oh, you want to get rid of cancer? Now it's overpopulation. We all starve. Or like you want to get rid of AIDS? Well, again, you know, more anything that's killing
little
people.
Now the gays are overpopulated.
Little did you know that AIDS was keeping at bay super AIDS.
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like there's going to be something, but
Let's assume it's not a monkey.
Okay, so what
situation.
I would pray away is terrible reality TV, because I don't have a problem with reality competition shows, but I do have a problem with shows like Mud People and Swamp Murders and like Dance Moms and just shit where it's like,
I love how you go from Swamp Murders to Dance Moms. Like,
Honey, Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. Yeah, yeah. Anything like anything Teen Mom, anything like that, because those are that is just begging people to be at their worst to get on TV. Yeah. And so like Top Chef, fine. Project Runway, fine. You know, like
adults consenting
shows,
to
shows where you're competing to try to win a prize with your talent. I'm all for that.
I even think there are reality shows that aren't competition that are valid too. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are.
Sure, just, maybe. Yeah, I can say that's fine, so I
would pick anti-science thought or like Luddites.
Oh god, yeah, I think I would go with anti-science.
Like
thought.
I wish I could pray away, which is ironic. Super ironic. Yeah, that just like no, just give in to science.
Yeah, I guess there's no monkey's paw there. I can't really think of anything.
Yeah, having
because it just results in people being smarter.
I guess, yeah.
Having recently been in Convergence, I would say I would like to pray away body odor.
There were some people that had this just particular combination of mildew and onions that was just killing me.
Onions?
People who don't wash their clothes right.
Like a few day old BO on a shirt kind of gets an oniony. It's
or like shirts that never got dry. Yeah, and now they're wearing them more.
Embarrassing personal history. I used to have a body odor problem, and I mean, I even showered every day, but I wasn't using. I was using deodorant, not antiperspirant, because I sweat a lot. I would sweat away the deodorant super fast.
Yeah.
And people would tell me I had a body odor problem, and I figured out what I had to do to fix it. And it's like, having had that problem, I'm now super hyper aware of it in other people.
And you wish you could tell those people, but you can't. There's no nice way to tell somebody, you don't smell good, and I'm sorry, and I know you're going to take offense to this. There's no nice way I can say, please go take a shower. Like, please, just please go take a shower.
So pray it away.
Yeah.
Pray it away because that's nicer.
It is nicer.
Yeah.
My second question, if you were to start this podcast over again, because it's been a year, you've learned some things, what would you do? What would you change?
All the hosts. boy, what would I change? I think I would love to have, if I had known it was going to get popular and it was actually going to be something, I would, because we didn't know, we weren't sure, I would have just right away been like, you know what, it's worth a few $100 for us all to pitch in and get good at recording equipment.
That's what I was going to say, like a soundboard and mics.
At the time, we didn't want to do that because it was like, what if this just ends up being like, we get 10 listeners a week and for like 5 weeks we do it and then something happens and we don't do it anymore and we have this, you know.
At this point, it's like to-do list.
It's gonna happen.
I'm super fucking proud that we for a year managed to produce a podcast unfailingly.
Absolutely.
Every week.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. Thank you.
It's
a pretty big feat considering we live in Eden Prairie and he lives in St. Paul and he's got two kids and we all do a million other things off.
Yeah.
Other than this.
But you tend to record like a couple at a time.
Yeah, right?
Sometimes.
And
yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
That's our secret.
I think part of it is.
Hey, we all do that.
I think part of it is I think we all really love doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I always look forward to recording because it's a blast.
Exactly.
What I would change, it's kind of equipment, but it's the, I'm a perfectionist and I'm completely unsatisfied with the kind of sound I can get in any kind of remote interview.
Mm-hmm.
So it means we're kind of not stuck, but the only people we can interview are people who are either local or are in town.
Yeah,
we can't do like Skyping or anything like that. It's not yet anyway.
Because I don't like the sound quality that I get off of it. And there are lots of people, you know, like we only just got PZ Myers on the podcast because he lives in Morris. Well, that's not that far, but it's still far enough.
And you all happen to be at Convergence.
Right.
Yeah.
And like Melinda Snodgrass was at Convergence this year. She was a guest of honor. She's an atheist. And I've got her contact information, but she's in California.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, she would be an awesome guest.
It's
but
true.
When do you actually make that work?
It's hard to maintain the quality when you're recording over Skype. I just did that this past week, and it was I cut out right at the end because my internet dropped off.
Yep.
So what I would do differently and what I hope to do this year is learn more about how to use that, how to come up with some better technology to do remote interviews. Mm-hmm.
And for recording and for... I there's some WordPress stuff on our website.
Oh, God.
that we had to kind of fumble through a few times, and there's like a day of the site being down and crap like that. The RSS feed took like a few weeks to get established properly.
I recently went through this reformatting of my podcast, and I was using a guy who had a really useful like how-to podcast, and I was like, this guy is great, he's awesome, and then I learned he ran a Christian podcast.
Oh, no! Monkey's paw!
And I was like,
awesome.
Anyway, we have more questions. Let's get to them. Also, to reflect the film question that you had, your favorite film in the last 30 days, I put one for. I'm going to put this one to you.
Okay.
What film do you love right up until the ending?
Ooh. Okay. I love the book and the movie too. Dreamcatcher, Stephen King's Dreamcatcher, which is so great, and it's very close to the book. And then at the very end, they just destroy it by making the kid with Down syndrome a magical alien.
Yes.
He's an alien. He's not just a kid with Down syndrome who has like weird psychic thing. Like in the book, they're connected just by this one event where they save him, and it's just for whatever reason it gives them all this kind of psychic thing that they all kind of have this deal, and it brings them together. And in the movie, they made it. He made him a fucking alien, and it was like, and now my whole planet needs me. And like it was just awful. It was just we went to saw it together, and I'm sitting there, and all I just went, what? Like, under my breath, Nick's like, shh. I'm like, this is awful. I was so mad. I almost wanted to walk out. I was so mad.
Tim?
Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
Oh.
Which I think is amazing right up until the last 30 seconds, because you're going through this, and I mean, the devastation that's going on is just fantastic. The scene in the basement with Tim Robbins, I think, is fucked up cool.
So good. Dakota Fanning's really good in that movie.
Yeah, I mean, the moment when the tripods show up and just start fucking shit up, just, like, scares the shit out of you. And then, at the end of the movie, he shows up at his wife's house and everybody's okay.
Yeah.
You know, after his son's like, Dad, trust me, I'll meet you at Mom's house. And then he does just meet him at Mom's house. And I'm like, really? We go through all of that, and then at the end, our core characters have suffered nothing except psychological trauma.
And they got dirty.
And I felt
they got super dirty.
There was a little Hollywood dirty.
Yeah,
they got some. There was some dirt, some dirt smudges and stuff. And that just really bugged me. It was like there was no cost to that
family.
To them
specifically, yeah.
The cost was all to people we didn't know. And and I didn't like that.
Which
I felt like
un-Spielberg. That's usually Spielberg gives you a little bit of a twinge to
Spielberg does happy endings, and I'm okay with happy endings, but usually you're right. There's some
change.
There's some
innocence lost.
You know,
something.
At the end of Jaws, you know, Quint is dead. You know?
Yeah.
And you like Quint.
Spoiler alert.
You know? So anyway.
Also, there's a shark.
Oh, fuck this. I'm out of
this
podcast.
At the end of E.T., Elliot and E.T. don't get to be together. You know, there's a bittersweet nature to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
sure.
And there was the sweet without the bitter with that. And it just didn't work.
Boy, you know, the first thing that came to mind was AI.
I'm with you there.
But like the Blue Fairy stuff. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the more I thought about it, the more I thought, Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh.
It's like they ran out of money and they didn't know how to end it. And so they ended it with a joke of them all getting arrested and carried away and all that, and, you know, for murdering people. But at the same time, like, I kind of wish they had written an actual ending to the movie.
It's a really good one. I had never thought of that. That's a good one.
Because it's a non-ending.
And then the movie's just over. I mean, you're just like, oh. Okay.
So the Grail's there in that castle, and I guess, oh, we're all being arrested. Oh, the movie's, everyone's dead or arrested.
Yeah.
And, okay.
That is a good one. And, you know, I could argue about AI any day because I actually love it.
I'd be interested
to hear your thoughts.
I really love the
ending, and I have very good justifications for why I think the ending is exactly perfect.
We can talk about that off mic.
We can, Well, no, that's 2 hours. Anyway, so, anyway.
Okay, fourth question. Give us an update. What is the stupidest thing that anyone has said about your atheism in the last year since you've started this podcast?
See, I've been saying a lot of stuff, but I'm frustrated because the thing that I want to mention, I can't remember the joke, but I made a joke online about some stupid thing a religious person had said. And there was some debate, there was some conversation about it on Facebook. You could go follow me on Facebook and maybe you can find it. And one person, after a while, who was basically telling me that they didn't like the joke, which is like, that's fine, you don't like the joke,
yeah,
I don't give a fuck.
Opinion.
eventually it came down to them saying, well, you know, I think the real problem here is everybody knows you're an atheist, and clearly you just made this joke to make fun of Christians. I'm like, no. Actually, I made the joke because I thought it was funny.
You're a comedian. You made the joke
because
you...
Yeah, it was on one of your that pissed me off blogs, I thought.
I think it turned into something on shit that pissed me off. But at first, it was just like, I came up with a one-liner and I put it online.
Yeah.
Because I do that sometimes. I'm like, is this funny? Let's find out.
Yeah.
And it just really ticked me off that it was like, no, I would not make an assumption that a Christian made a joke about atheists because they're Christian.
Right.
That is a completely unfair assumption. Because I'll make jokes about atheists if I think they do stupid shit too.
Sure.
And it has nothing to do with my personal belief structure.
Also, you just make jokes. You're a comedian.
Yeah.
Right. And so opportunity for humor.
That really ticked me off, the whole assumption that because I'm an atheist, I'm going to make fun of Christians just because I'm trying to score points against them. And that's
what it's all about, scoring points.
Yeah.
Mine just happened this week, actually. My 32nd birthday was yesterday, and so I
happy birthday!
Yes, thank you. Very happy birthday.
I wasn't fishing for that, but thank you. So I got a card from my grandparents, from my mom's parents, and my grandfather's a Lutheran minister, grandmother's very Lutheran religious. Mm-hmm. And so the front of
they know that we're atheists and have a podcast and all of it.
They know, and they're cool with
it. They seemed cool with it.
My mom says they've talked about it and they're fine with whatever.
Yeah.
They're non-judgy people. He's kind of like a Jimmy Carter, Mr. Rogers type guy. So the front of the card is religious.
Super religious. Like,
you open the card and the left page is a Bible quote. The right, the main body of the card that's printed is something about, like, you know, the Lord loving you and blah blah blah.
May His blessings guide you. May He always hold you in His hands.
So it's religious front, Bible quote, religious inside. The handwritten note inside is, "We love you for who you are and never change."
Cognitive dissonance.
Oh, really? It was just like
mixed messaging.
They're incredibly well-meaning, and I understand that it's important to them to think or reinforce that God loves me, but at the same time, like, it felt like so incredibly dismissive of who I am, because I identify as an atheist. If they really wanted me to be who I am and be happy with who I am and not change, then they would have known not to put in to get a nice secular card.
Also, it's
just a regular old birthday card.
You have to try to get a religious card. I mean, there are far more secular cards than religious cards at the store. You have to go out of your way to go for a religious one.
And they found a super religious
one.
And again, I don't want to be ungrateful of a birthday card and them remembering my birthday or anything like that.
The
intent is good, and I understand that. At the same time, it can still be a little bit of a letdown. It can still be insulting.
Yeah.
Well, it's the thought of, well, okay, I know that they're religious. Would I send them a card that says, "There is no God. Happy birthday."
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I
secular Christmas.
I was talking about getting into an argument with some anti-vaxxers, of course, and talking about, you know, this guy, it was on a friend's page, and this guy, so a friend of theirs was saying, you know, the Amish don't have, they have a very low instance of autism among
almost
the Amish,
zero.
Almost zero, and it's because they don't vaccinate. And I said, well, first of all, they have a very low diagnosis of autism, which is not the same as instance, and also, I might as well say that the reason that they don't, you're saying the reason that is they don't vaccinate, I'm going to say it's zippers. Did you know zippers cause autism? You know
cell
how
phones.
I know that? Because the Amish don't use zippers, and they have a very low instance of autism.
The Amish don't drive cars, therefore cars cause autism.
Yeah, and this guy said to me, and he was lumping me with the two friends in as well. He's like, "Your blind devotion to science is the same as religious zealotry."
Oh.
The fact that you will accept anything science tells you, that you don't even, and it's like, am I supposed to be doing these like physics experiments for myself in my house? Like, I don't know what exactly it is that, and
those
it's not also yeah,
yeah
also like, is science just a guy, like just one guy that wrote a book? And I mean, it was so maddening to have it and just dismissed like that I just said, all right, conversation over. Like, I mean, that's a mic drop. We're fucking done. There's absolutely no way I'm going to be able to talk to you if you're that illogical.
Oh, that
yeah.
But that makes me crazy. By the way, zippers do cause autism. I know because I wear zippers all the time.
Yeah.
Hashtag Zippergate.
My kids both use zippers. And
yeah.
Oh, shit.
Did you know every single kid that's ever been diagnosed with autism was around zippers at one point in his
life? Oh.
That's a fucking scary fact. I know. Wow. I know.
The tangential.
Government's doing nothing about it.
Tangential, you guys were all great at It's a Conspiracy.
Oh,
just ripping off.
Thank you. That was super fun.
I loved that, man.
We have some ideas for something similar next year.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
So let's wrap this shit up.
Let's do it.
You're all comedians.
It's true, I think.
In name, in title, yeah.
How would you create the perfect atheist joke?
God. I knew this question ahead of time and I still don't have an answer.
I think the key ingredient is irreverence.
You can workshop it.
Irreverence
is a key ingredient.
I think self-deprecation is usually good and funny. And I think if you're an atheist and you, like, take it all so seriously, you can't laugh at yourself.
Now, is this a joke against atheists or is this a joke against religion?
Is this a joke
for atheists?
For atheists. I think a joke, a lighthearted joke about atheism to atheists. Like, okay, the favorite jokes among Unitarian Universalists are UU jokes.
Yes.
Because there are so few of them. How do you... Well, and it's kind of novel. Like, yeah. How do you chase out the new Unitarian Universalist family? You burn a question mark in their lawn.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Why aren't Unitarians very good choir singers? They're too busy reading ahead to make sure they agree with it. stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
Like, I think that type of joke for atheism...
Sure. I was thinking more like, when you said like a good atheist joke, I was thinking more like jokes that are so very, very anti-religion in a sense, like the one that the priest, the child molester, and like something walk into a bar and he orders a drink.
Yeah.
Like something like, right. Where like, yeah. But I think definitely, I've always thought that puns were really good in the Buddhist hot dog make me one with everything joke, like things like that. I think are super funny and good for religion.
I think we had Joseph Scrimshaw on the show and he told a joke in one of his shows that I thought was hilarious, which was atheist porn. The only thing everybody can agree on is that there's no director. which I'm like, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great because it pokes fun at atheists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Without saying atheists are stupid or awful or anything like
or
that.
Angry,
it's like,
or whatever.
Or angry is just like, well, let's make fun of what atheists think.
Yeah.
I think in my initial conception of this question, I was thinking about jokes that appeal to atheists. So
I've
gone all over the place.
That's good.
I have a favorite atheist joke.
What is it?
So there's an atheist at a restaurant and he orders the soup. He gets brought his bowl of soup and there's a fly in it. And so the atheist gets the waiter's attention and he says, "Excuse me, sir, what's this fly doing in my soup?" And the waiter says, "Well, praying." And he says, "Well, that's funny. I can't eat this. Take it back." And the waiter says, "You see, the fly's prayers were answered."
That's good. So. I like that.
I don't know if we came up
That's
with
a good
answer. But
I think so.
Yeah, all right.
We workshopped it.
You found it. You found different answers to the question, which was just as useful, I think.
We Unitarian Universalist did it.
We wrote a joke by committee.
Yeah.
So, Joshua Humphrey, your podcast is the TC Theater Podcast.
I run two podcasts.
Oh, please tell us about both of them.
TwinCitiesTheaterConnection.com is where you can find the one based on the theater community, and right now I'm mainly producing Fringe content, and that'll be happening up until the Fringe starts, and a little bit during it as well. And I run a podcast called Double Bill, where we smash two things together and see how they taste. Right now, it's been just movies together. The last episode was Cloud Atlas and Holy Motors.
Oh my god!
Which was a mind fuck and a half. And then, like the first episode was Manhunter and Red Dragon.
Back.
That was fun.
Yeah. That's great.
And then the middle episode was Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So just seeing how they all go. We're trying to plan a Pacific Rim something else.
Ooh, yeah. Maybe like the original Godzilla.
We haven't decided yet. We're thinking like
Godzilla
Kaiju,
2000.
Maybe like or
Godzilla 2000.
Gamera.
There's no reason to watch that. No.
Someone suggested to me today, since they're both in the theater, you should go see it. You should see Pacific Rim and Grown Ups 2, which made me want to vomit.
Oh my god!
It outsold Pacific Rim.
I know.
That's just
one's a movie full of giant bloated monsters, and the other one's Pacific Rim.
Oh, that's So those are your two podcasts, and we
you can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Humphrey. I'll be tweeting during the festival as well. But if you want Fringe content, tctheaterconnection.com, and you can go to the Fringe Festival website. You can go to Minnesota Playlist. There's going to be tons of Fringe content.
And this weeks. Episode is airing the Tuesday prior to the start of the Minnesota Fringe Festival. So if you're a local, you've never checked it out, you know, even just pick out one show or two. Go give it a try. It's really, I think, an amazing microcosm of the Twin Cities theater community and a good way to kind of introduce yourself to it.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Is there any one show that you're, like, most looking forward to? Like,
okay, there's one show that I am really looking forward to, but also kind of dreading. Uh-huh. It's the musical adaptation of The Human Centipede.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So
it's going to have some great dance numbers.
Yeah. So,
okay. Well, my joke was, like, we're a human centipede. So if that happens in the show, sold.
If it doesn't happen, disappointed.
If it doesn't happen, zero stars.
Yeah.
The other one I was looking forward to was actually Lolita by Three Guys. which was previewed on Monday and just had Brant Miller, who's common in the Twin Cities theater.
Isn't that the Four Humors show?
It's the Four Humors, but Brant Miller is in it, and he was just in a twosie.
Oh boy.
Played completely straight as Humbert walks around him.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Four Humors is Four Humors is a group. One of the people in that, Jason Ballweber, actually used to be a vilifier with Vilification Tennis.
Oh yeah.
So for those of you that think that nothing good can come of Vilification Tennis, this one guy is the only example I can give to disprove that. So anyway, thanks a lot, Josh. We are definitely out of time. Thank you so much for listening to Geeks Without God. Have a lovely week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown for our theme song, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and look at past podcasts at www.geekswithoutgod.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
This is Tim's fault.